nitrous oxide emissions from irrigated cotton in Texas and Arizona. Kevin?
Thank you, Brian. We'll present data from both Texas A&M and ARS. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Clinton Williams, soil scientist at Maricopa, Jen Moore Cusera is a professor of soil micro at Texas Tech. Okay, as a background, nitrous oxide emissions of hundreds of studies the last 30 years have shown in general you're going to stimulate NTO emissions from the soil when you add nitrogen fertilizer, and it could be 2, 4, 6-fold. It's a very potent greenhouse gas. This is why we're very interested in it. 300x more effective at trapping heat than CO2. Has a very long residence time of 120 years. But agronomically, we don't really see a lot of impact because we're talking about IPCC factor of 1%, which I'll address, generally less than 2. So it's the farmer is not losing dollars generally if he's losing N2, 2% of N2O. So it's more the trying to think what I have for a pointer. Okay, good. It's more this, the greenhouse gas effect of what the concern is. Now, in terms of the trend, I first started working on N2O in my ARS postdoc in Fort Collins back in about here. We were at about 310. Now we're at about 320. So it's a pretty linear increase. Mauna Loa in Hawaii didn't start measuring until 98. And agriculture is a very large chunk of sources of N2O globally, and as does actually nitrogen applications to row crops. Again, there's just not a lot of information on cotton. There's not a lot of information from the Southwest, from West Texas and Arizona. We've saw nice data today from California, which I'll address. But the other thing is the life cycle analysis, which a lot of people are very interested in now, for everything from the products we buy at Walmart to, of course, our crops and our exports to other countries like Europe. Cotton is not very pretty. Western agriculture, where it's irrigated, is not very pretty, but particularly cotton. Cotton Inc. has funded life cycle analysis studies, and it's just doesn't look very good. And so in many of these cases, they're not considering N2O, hence it's part of our motivation here. I'm going to discuss three sites, two years of data from West Texas subsurface drip irrigation, a West Texas center pivot on a farmer's field, central Arizona data for surface irrigation. So in some senses, we'll be able to compare. In some senses, we'll see the differences across irrigation systems. And first, this is in Lubbock County at the Texas A&M AgriLife Research Extension Center near the Lubbock Airport. This is an A-cup sandy clay loam, a mollisol. I have 2 years of data, 05 and 06. The measurement periods are there. This is deficit irrigation at 85% ET replacement, a Fibromax high-yielding variety. Nitrate in the profile, we always try to measure to about 3 or 4 feet, although in Texas I pretty much consider 2 foot, 60 centimeters to be the root zone under drip irrigation. We don't see a lot of rooting below that, and the nitrate was fairly low at 20 kgs, and so organic carbon is there. And you can see a picture of this cotton. We have a conservation tillage, stale beds, rye cover crop is terminated with Roundup. The tape here is actually on 80-inch centers for this 40-inch bed. The cost is about $1,000 per acre. There's about 300,000 acres of drip in West Texas now, obviously converted from furrow. We were talking about a couple talks ago with Alton about incentives. In West Texas, farmers have been able to double their yields with drip irrigation coming off a furrow with a still average 12 inches of irrigation. So that's a real success story, I would say. More details, we use 3200 fertigate from first square to mid bloom. And here's some of the zero end is there. We only measured the N2O on these treatments. We had other treatments out there like timing. But reflectance-based NDVI, actual active sensor-based management, we start out low. We start at half of our soil test. And when NDVI falls below, significantly below that of the soil test-based plots, then we start ramping up the injection rate. So we're most years assured putting out less N with reflectance-based management. The objective is to, the hypothesis is that we will not hurt yield, and we were pretty successful with that. And so these are the amounts of N's and injected in those 2 years. Floyd County was on a farmer's field, shorter measurement period, Pullman clay loam. This is actually a Cotton Incorporated funded belt-wide study on variety and nitrogen. We chose just one variety, the 9180. Deficit irrigation, pretty low nitrate. We did convince the farmers it isn't easy not to fertigate because most folks with pivots are going to fertigate. And so he sacrificed a ground of pine, all his nitrogen outside of our experimental area. Okay, I mentioned that. 3200 at these nitrogen rates. In Arizona, in Pinal County, at the Maricopa Ag Center, where USDA has their Arid Land Ag Research Center, University of Arizona has about 1,000 acres. It's a Casa Grande sandy loam. I've only been there a year. We got 1 year of data, a Delta Pine longer variety. The irrigation is more full irrigation. It's not deficit. That's about 40 inches of in-season irrigation. A lot higher nitrate in the profile. Very little organic matter in the soils. They do laser level a lot of tillage. We did fertigate or knife, if you're interested in comparing these, and we also had some reflectance-based treatments. And so fertigation of UAN is very common, also anhydrous in Arizona and northern Mexico in the Sonoran Desert. And as you can imagine, with surface irrigation, you generally put out a lot more on the front end and the bottom end. So the fertilizer distribution is probably going to be that way as well. So we compared knifing with fertigating. This rate was achieved with a 3.5 bale yield goal, 2 foot nitrate, reflectance based. We put on half the amount of nitrogen, and the NDVI never fell short. This is ground applicator, it belongs to Dr. Pedro Andrade Sanchez, University of Arizona. Our first side dress. Fertigating like this, UAN, or do we do it all the reps together, all the treatments we have? I didn't show a picture, but we do have poly pipe with gates. The chamber methods are the same chambers that I think were developed by Arvin Mosier in Fort Collins, vented. About a liter in size. Our periods are of pulling the samples are 0, 12, and 24 minutes. We don't do zeros in all the chambers. We do about every five. In the furrow is the placement of the chamber. We also have TDR data to, it's about 4 inches. And soil temperature, here's a picture in Lubbock under the drip irrigation, the stale beds. Terminated rye, put the chamber right in there. It has an edge, works very nicely. And this is right over the tape. Tape's 12 inches deep. There's 24-inch spacings on the emitters, but we don't worry about getting over emitter. I don't know where those are, so we're random on the placement up and down the row. And here's some of the data. We did put calcium carbide in 2 hours before on these and half of the ones in Arizona. The calcium carbide, again, I keep on citing Dr. Mosier, but he was my postdoc advisor a long time ago. And we produce acetylene and we can get nitrous oxide and dinitrogen flux. Take a soil core, put it in, it's moist, we put the core back, wait 2 hours, and that's how we get N2O plus N2. And you can see here, basically, during this period from early squaring to about mid to peak bloom, these are the treatments. Statistically, there's no difference between these treatments. We do see some peaks. We do see a general trend of decreasing activity, and I think that's corresponding to plant uptake. By the way, our nitrogen recovery in the cotton plants, we have that data, which I won't present today, but I'll tell you orally. We get 75% recovery in the plant in these cotton fields under drip irrigation, about 40 under the pivot, and a measly 15 to 20% recovery under furrow irrigation. So the second year, not as many peaks, a similar trend here. It tapered off a lot earlier, and I'll show you cumulative data in a minute. The Floyd County site, Cotton Inc. Funded, we have nice nitrogen rates here from zero to the high rate here. We cannot detect the zero, and just good statistical differences. In rate, 2010, it was just the opposite of this year. It was very rainy. We had 9 inches on July 4th. We missed a lot of peaks on the farmer's field. We just couldn't drive out there after all the rains we had. Then again, as tapering off, there's just the one side dress application as plant uptake was moving towards maximum. In Arizona, we haven't seen much N2O. We see about double in the presence of acetylene, shown, meaning that is N2. This is N2 alone, as was the last one. Again, this is N2 alone. I didn't point out no acetylene there. But we do have a big peak with Fertigate treatment on this date, and I'll show you the cumulatives in a minute. Thinking carbon is just really low in Arizona is why we're not getting much in central Arizona. Going the wrong way, excuse me. Now let's look at the cumulatives and try to compare all these foresight years together, and the F-tests are there. Lubbock, drip, here's the measurement period, here's the treatments, the N rates. We varied from 1,000 to 1,700 grams for N per hectare, less in the second year, no statistical difference. Floyd County under the drip, a little bit lower. We do have good statistics on the treatment differences from 100 to 645. And in Pinal County, in central Arizona, we have these treatments, zero, the N rates, Fertigate, Knife, and we have statistical differences with the Fertigate is the highest. And so they're very interesting. Again, the overall numbers are higher here under drip that year. Maybe the soil is just being kept wet continuously, and that's why you get that. Just a plug for the GraceNet, the data entry. It's pretty easy. It only took me about 4 hours to do that. In conclusion, we could say that N2O emissions are low in terms of the emission factors, where we could only calculate it if there's a statistical difference between zero and fertilized. It was less than 1%. We did see the encouraging result of no statistical difference under fertigation with drip. The remaining questions in the future, I think we need to do more fertigation. I was very pleased to see the California work on furrow versus drip for tomatoes. It's hard to do nitrogen fertility work under pivots where they're fertigating places like Nebraska and West Texas, but it certainly would be a big payoff. Carbon is probably the main limitation. We also want to look more at the N2. It's a lot more work. It's double the work to do the acetylene block as well as the regular N2O, but we typically get double, sometimes triple, quadruple the N2O flux in the presence of acetylene. I want to thank Cotton Incorporated for their continued support, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Time for a question?
Bob?
Yeah, on behalf of Cotton Incorporated, I would like to say that your concerns about life cycle analysis are founded in this. It is true that cotton needs its resources. The life cycle analysis is not holy writ. It's a developing technique. It's not really a science. In fact, it's a box bounded by assumption. And the question then becomes, cotton is good or bad compared to what? You know, any Jungian question. And the answer is, it's better than corn, it's better than almost any vegetable crop except the friendly tree crops. And compared to a suburb with four houses, it's fantastic because the suburb emits all sorts of things and energy and creates only consumers. And in fact, the wonderful thing about cotton is that you cannot produce produce a pound of cotton without taking CO2 from the atmosphere. And you cannot produce a pound of any synthetic fiber without putting carbon into the atmosphere.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I guess I was just referring to some of those studies from the University of Arkansas, Bob, that was showed compared to corn and other crops. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Let's give him another hand.